Shall we get started? It's 3:30. We got an hour. So we'll get started again. Thank you for coming back. Case study. We're talking about one-on-one debriefing. For those of you that were in the class earlier, here's the question. You're working in a hospital setting. A nurse witnessed the unexpected death of a child. There was no time for a group debrief. Would a one-to-one debrief be appropriate? Part of it is educating administration, charge nurses, and so on, that they know you're there. So here's what I do. I'll tell you my secrets, right? You're getting all the secrets. When I go to the hospital, they start calling me the candy man because I started out, I bought, we had this, our church had this account with a food bank, and I would buy these boxes of fun-sized Snickers by the pound. And so I'd go in there with bags of them, and I would throw Snickers bars at them. Because when I first walk in, I'm just the chaplain. I have a chaplain tag. They're busy. Nurses sitting around the thing. They don't care what I'm doing. I'm there for the patients. Chaplain, help us with this patient. They don't care. They don't want me talking to them. I'm not for them. Well, then my tag changed, and now I have, I'll show you, I have a, I think it's in here. I have a staff. I made sure it was a staff one. And this is the key to the police station. Can you believe that? And this is my tag, and it has staff chaplain. I'm the only one with that tag hanging down, okay? And so I go in, and I'll wear this around, and I'll walk by, and say, I'm here for you guys, and it's education. So this is what we call prep work, okay, ahead of time. And you got to go in there. They got to know who you are. So I'll take these candy bars. Well, I told you I started out buying them myself, and now the hospital pays for them. Hospital buys them for me. So they have a cupboard there at the hospital that's for me, and they fill it with candy all the time. And if I get low, I say, you need to buy me some more candy. And I've thousands of dollars on chocolate. And I'll go through, like this week I saw between 200 and 300 nurses and doctors already this week. I go on every floor. I started a newsletter. The newsletter got so popular, everybody was clamoring for it, that now the hospital puts it on the intranet. So the administration will click on newsletters. They get my everybody gets my newsletter on the intranet, as well as the ones I hand out. So the chocolate gets them, they know and part of that has to do with stress debriefing. So it's preemptive stuff. If you can get them, I'll talk more about this in a minute, but in some of the tools, but if you can get them to laugh just for a minute, if they're stressed out, it changes the whole mood. And I'll explain that to you in another class, but maybe in this one, actually, in a minute, in the next slide presentation. But they know who I am then. So when there's a trauma or situation like that, administration knows to get a hold of me. We now have an email. We have a hotline. I have a business card that has, all that information. I'm called at all of these different floors, mostly women's and children's and ER. Now, what we found in ER was, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but in the ER, we found out that that a lot of times they didn't have time to go between. This is one of the things, no time for a group debrief. And actually, they might even not have time to sit and talk with me. So we have a little cart. I made this cart up. It's about this big. And it has on it Coroplast sign. It says CISM cart. And inside this cart is full of water bottles. And on top is a big basket full of water flavorings. So when there is a critical incident in the ER and everybody's back to back to back, administration rolls my cart out, passes out water and flavors to get them to stop and think for a minute and process and then get back at it again. And that's debriefing. That's a tool. That's part of the debriefing. That's one of the debriefing tools.
And that's one of the nurses and
doctors. Nurses and doctors, yeah. Yeah. When I come through, oftentimes they'll say, you're my favorite person. Well, last week I had a wedding in ICU. So because they knew who I was, there's a guy who's dying. He wanted to get married. So they said, would you come and marry us, marry him? And so because I'm the candy guy, they know who I am. They call me, come in, would you consider marrying him? So I did. I performed the wedding in the ICU. So anyway, so that's case study one. Case study two, identify a situation in your field where a debrief would be appropriate. You have different stories and things. Think about, this is the tail end of the last session. I'm sorry about that. But think about your situation. Can you think of a scenario where you've encountered something where you think a debrief would be appropriate? I walked in recently to an office at the hospital, and one of the administrators was crying. And I said, what's going on? And she said, I had to put my dog down this morning. And you're like, it's a very real problem. So I stopped and I had prayer with her and I said, you know, let's pray together and ask God to comfort her. Because, you know, the loss, the emptiness that she feels. And I'm not really a dog person. It was like, without our dogs, you know, outside. Without, that's the Bible verse. Without, no, I'm kidding. But anyway, but I know if you're a dog person or a cat person or something, you know, it's fine. It's fine. But you're close to your animal, and it's a very real feeling and emotion. So now being pregnant, and that's another, it's a traumatic thing. You've got to realize that in every situation, there are different things that can create the trauma. And surprisingly, what might be something for one person isn't a problem for the other. I went to one debrief once where one of the nurses was curled up in the bathroom on the floor in the fetal position, crying, and everyone else was walking around saying, this is just a normal day. You know, but that situation caused that response in that person. And I had to talk to the other nurses and say, look, guys, this is a very real problem. Let's calm down a little bit. Let's dial it back.
My daughters one's an LPN and one's an RN. And having a cold and resuscitating or even having somebody pass on them. Like my daughter goes, I had a stressful day. I just don't want to talk. I have a stat, you know, and one of the girls did not make it and she was young. That was her first stat. She'll never forget it. And okay. Then had passed away. But, you know, they'll say, well, it wasn't a good day. I had a stat. We had a couple stats. You know.
Okay.
That's really, I'm glad they talked to me.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's hard on those nurses.
Okay. So now what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the debriefing process. And I'm going to tell you, this is the meat and potatoes of the presentation. The debriefing process, we're going to talk about this. Whoops, individua. Individua, that's a new name right there, new word, individua. Okay, so preparation for the debrief. Are you prepared? Here's how to prepare. First of all, you need to assess the readiness of the individual. Everyone's going to have different reactions and so on. When I do a group debrief, typically it'll be a room like this, a crowd like this, and people will be, you know, arms crossed, sitting back on their tailbone, and you can go through the room and you can see the guys that are ready and the guys that are not ready, and the gals that are ready and the gals that are not ready. This week, one of the debriefs I did this week was, you know, there was dispatch officers in there, and they weren't saying anything. And I had one of my trainees was leading the debrief. I'd certified him, and I had him there, and he was leading it. And I was watching how he was handling the crowd. And he kept talking to the guys that were talking, you know. And these other people were sitting in the back. So I jumped in, and I'm like, you're not saying anything, you know. It's okay. But I had to figure out, I didn't pinpoint it, but I had to figure out some way how to get them talking, right? So that's one of your first things is to assess the readiness of the individual to talk. They're not necessarily going to be, oh, great, the debriefer's here. Nine times out of ten, they don't want you to debrief them. They're, I'm okay. Nine times out of ten. You have to convince them that this is critical and important for them. Okay? Choose a private and calm space. Now, I'm going to say to you this. Be careful. What I'm going to say, I think, is really, really important. And you brought it up a little bit ago. Hear me out. In our circles, in our independent Baptist Bible independent circles, we put a lot of emphasis on being careful that you're not in a room alone and counseling and that kind of thing. I'm going to say to you that in a perfect world, you're not alone with someone of the opposite sex that's not your spouse. In a perfect world. But in a trauma, in a bad situation, you may not be able to say, well, I only have my door open. You may not be able to do that. So I'm going to tell you this. If you enter this, we talked about boundaries in the first time. If you enter this in your mind, you have to have walls build up. And you have to know there are lines you cannot cross. And you need to be completely ethical in everything you do. And if you're not going to be ethical, stay out of this business. Because you're talking about people's emotions and the deepest hurts and deepest pains, and you're there to help them. And if you try to take advantage of that because of their vulnerability, stay out of it. Don't get involved in this. Because this is very raw stuff, very real stuff.
Not to meet with them?
What I'm saying is you are going to meet with them. You're not always going to have the perfect situation. You got what I'm saying? I've met with, of course, the nurses where I work, most of them, I'm quite a bit their senior. One of them calls me Pawpaw because I went and asked her if she knew who the Beatles were, and she says, the who? And I said, no, not the who, the Beatles. And she's like, I don't know what that is. And I said, how old are you? And she said, how old are you? And I said, well, and then she said, you're as old as my Pawpaw. And so from then on, when I walk in, she calls me Pawpaw. But the young girls, they have that relationship. I was on the fourth floor one day and they hadn't seen me, and a couple of them come up and one of them gave me a hug and she was tearful. I said, what's the matter with you? And she said, we hadn't seen you for so long. We started looking at the obituaries. But there's at our hospital, there's 3,500 employees, and I'm not always, they don't always see me every week. I pop out of nowhere, and that's how we do it. But anyway, choose a private and calm space. It's important. Think about the other individual. Don't think about you at this point. You're trying to help, but make sure the boundaries are appropriate. You, are you following me here? You got to be careful with this. And your spouse needs to understand, you know, and they need to be able to trust you, right? Trust you completely, and you need to be trustworthy, right? So prepare yourself to use good communication tools. Before you go, don't go in by the seat of your pants and just like, boy, I've done this forever and ever. You know, I've done these so much. You know, we have in our organization, I actually wrote the manual that all of my team uses. And the teams, the people that I train, and this is like a group debriefing, and I wrote this for the hospital. This is the hospital. Well, this is East Central Law Enforcement. I have the same one. I have that for the East Central Law Enforcement Training Unit. I have one that has Sarah Bush Lincoln Hospital on it too, and we give these to all of our trainee, all of our groups, and it shows them exactly what to do. I go right here's, and this is in a group debrief, right? So, you know, the different phases that you go through and what to say. So they can sit there on their debrief and they can go through it. And, okay, this is the next thing I'm supposed to do. And this is the next thing. And I've got some appendix. I I might be able to. This is with the other chorus. This is a different chorus, but yeah, I might be able to come up with something. I'll see what I can do.
When you're debriefing them, like what we learned in ALBA, sit there and listen.
We're gonna,
don't want to hear your story.
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Yes, ma'am. Hold that thought. Hold that thought because we will get there. So what I'm wanting you to get at this point is to understand that you need to prepare yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Every time, now get this, I believe personally, I believe in the power of God, and I think you guys wouldn't be here if you didn't. But I always spend time in prayer before I go into these meetings. Sometimes they'll ask me to pray with them, but I don't go there to preach or evangelize. They know that. But when I go in, I ask God to fill me and speak through me, because it's the power of God that changes their lives, right? And if I give them the tool, it's like the blind man Jesus healed. The power of God flowed through Jesus and gave him the power to give sight to the blind, right? That guy now was helped. It's the same with emotional help, trauma. Right? So prepare yourself. Prepare yourself emotionally and spiritually. Active listening. We'll talk more about listening later. But here's some of your communication tools. Active listening is very, very important. Learning how to listen. One of the best things about debriefing is that debriefing gives you tools to be able to listen. It helps you ask the right questions to get them to talk. You have to be prepared. You might have a list of questions, 5 or 6 or 7 questions, if the conversation goes silent. You might ask a question, and again, I'll have more about this later, but there's open-ended questions versus closed-ended questions. A closed-end question will get a yes or a no. That doesn't open them to conversation. But an open-ended question where you ask a question and then you sit and just listen and wait for them to respond, that emptiness. When they're asked a question, they will automatically want to fill the void with their answers. So learning how to listen and how to get them to talk. I'm going to tell you, debriefing sometimes will help you in your relationships with your spouses as well, because some of the biggest problems that spouses have with each other is they'll say, you aren't listening to me. Okay? So how do you make them feel listened? See, one of your biggest, most important things in debriefing is helping them feel like somebody heard them.
Let's say you would let them talk and you would listen and you go, so I hear that you're having a hard time. Can you tell me more about what you're feeling?
Right.
And then they,
correct. And we'll cover more of that in a little bit. I'm just giving you the yeah, we're going to keep digging deeper here. But thank you for saying that. You're exactly right. We'll come back to that. If I don't come back to it, remind me. Reflective responses. Reflective responses. This is something in communication. Some of you guys are maybe familiar with this. So let's see. Let me get some help. Can I have somebody volunteer to come help me? Come up here and help me. Sit down in this chair up here, and I'll show you this just a little bit. Do you know how to? Maybe you guys can't see. Let's grab a couple chairs up here closer where we can see. You can see. So here. Come sit right here. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Come sit in this chair here. So they can. Yeah, come on. Sit up here. So yeah, I know, right? So we're gonna talk about something here, and. I don't know if you'll notice what I'm doing here, but I'm sitting exactly like she's sitting. So if she moves, let's say you move somehow, move your feet, and so I'll move like this. It's called reflective response. If she crosses her arms, you know, I cross my arms. Does that make sense? That's one of the ways that they start feeling connected, okay? Thank you very much for your help. So you'll see this it's funny to watch kids, teenagers, you know, they're dating, you know? You like pizza? Oh, I like pizza. You know, oh, we're made for each other. Yeah. Oh, but do you like pizza with bacon on it? That's the question. Well, anyway, who doesn't, right? So you'll see kids, they'll start, when someone's flirting, often what they're doing when they're flirting is they're mirroring. It's a form of communication. It's their base nature. So when you're, if you know that ahead of time, you realize, hey, look, this is how I'm going to connect with this person. I'm going to mirror what they're doing. It's a psychological thing. Nonverbal communication. Nonverbal communication, this is one of the biggest problems we have in our culture. So I'm talking to you and, wait a second, what you're saying is really important, but... This is really important too. Here, wait a second. I'm gonna check this real quick. Okay, what were you saying? What just happened? We broke the communication line, didn't we?
I don't think they're important. Your phone's more important.
And in your mind, you're thinking, I'm just busy, and they feel like you're too busy
they're
for
not
them.
Not important. This is more important than what you're doing with them.
In a debrief, one of the things you need to do is put your phone down, turn it on, do not disturb. You can't be disturbed by anything. You have to make them absolutely feel like they are the center of the world at that moment, and you care only about them. Now, that means there's a beginning and an end to that period. So there's ways to stop that conversation, right? Get up, it's time to go, shake hands, God bless you, it's been good being with you. You have to end it. But during that period of time, you put your full focus on them. Now, your expressions on your face, nodding. Yeah, I'm getting what you're saying. Oh, okay. That's nonverbal. Okay? That's important. Empathy. How do we empathize? Well, one of the ways is by reframing what they said. So they say, I did this and then I did that. And so I was going down the street and all of a sudden this cat jumped out in front of me and I ran right over the cat. And you're like, oh man, you know, that's empathy. He was like, man, I hate that. Oh, that's awful. The cat, man, it's so hard when the animal, wow. You know, I feel bad for you. You know what I'm saying? Wow. You got to really, don't fake it. Okay? Don't fake it. But understand, and sometimes you repeat what they said in a different way, like you were saying earlier. So what I'm hearing you say is, this is how you feel about this. Man, I get that. Now, at this point, empathy, you got to be careful with your stories. Now, in a class setting like this, I'll tell a lot of stories. When I'm doing a debrief, I don't. One of the biggest complaints I get from all first responders is we don't want to hear their stories. We have a problem that needs dealt with. But they also need to know that you get it. They need to know you get it. And if you don't get it, maybe you should set yourself up to in a situation, a ride-along or something where you can feel what they feel so you can be part of the club. Does that make sense?
And the church says to comfort others with the same comfort with which you have been comforted.
I like it.
That's exactly what I think he's talking about.
I like it. That's a great verse for that. Exactly right. That fits well. So, If you're trying to comfort somebody and you've never felt that or never experienced it, you don't know anything about it. I could tell you story after story after story of traumas that I've been through that would leave us all in tears and make us all want to jump off the bridge. But, you know, those traumas themselves created a feeling within me. So when someone has something, they're touched with something like that, I know inside. And I also know that just saying I know isn't good.
I feel it.
It's a huge, vast spectrum out there of all the different troubles and problems people have and all that. There's no way you know.
The best thing you can do when you get with, if you're with somebody and they got some kind of problem and you're not familiar, that familiar with it, the best thing you can tell them is, you know, I don't quite understand that. Would you explain it to me? Would you help me understand what you're going through? That will win them.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it will.
To learn from them. And they want people to know.
Sometimes it will. You're right. Go ahead.
Sometimes I know what to say. Somebody said this. Tell them I can't possibly understand what you're going through. I'm so sorry.
But I want to understand.
And sometimes through transference, you'll pick up by listening to their story, you will start feeling what they're feeling.
Right.
When I was working at a women's resource center, it was a homeless shelter, but also we were advocates and counselors. In the evening, just sitting where all the ladies are and just making yourself available, they will start talking to you and you hear the stories. I mean, I'm thinking of a certain situation. They were just telling me what they went through. Mm-hmm. And it just sitting there and just listening. I didn't say much. I just listened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked that. And they were willing to open up to me about being abused and broken bones and things like that. And it's, I've never been through that.
Right.
But I felt very in tune to listening.
Mm-hmm.
My mom go through stuff. But still, I listened to them and they really enjoyed me just sitting there. I wasn't intrusive to them. Because I just, it was a house setting. So I just went in there with the ladies and said, how are you guys doing? And all of a sudden, they just started talking about their trauma.
And that happens. Yeah. Once they start talking, they won't stop. And I'll tell you this in a debrief. We'll talk about this a little bit more in a second. You go through a series of things. Oftentimes, once you get through the cycle, the whole series of things you're supposed to go through, sometimes you'll rush it when you're first doing it. And you'll get through because I got to do this, and then I got to do this, and then I got to do this. And you'll get at the end, after you're done, they'll all sit back. We're done with it now. And they'll start talking and they'll start sharing. And the actual real work happens after the debrief is over.
Now, what
it's
if,
pretty interesting.
What if you're in that, you're sitting there, you're talking, and I go, there's a way to do it, but then something feels like, well,
okay,
go to this part because this is.
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked that. Be careful about that. Because
you might miss
what your best bet at that point is to say, we're going to get to that. Hold that thought. What you're saying is important and valid, but hold that thought and we'll get back to it. Because what happens in a debrief is you start out here and you take them down into their emotions and then you bring them back out again. You don't want to go from here to here because you'll miss this piece. Mm-hmm. You also don't want to go from here to here and back again, because then the process doesn't happen. It's like this. It's like, have you heard of REM sleep? So I don't know if you guys, how you guys are, but most of the time I don't even use an alarm clock. I wake up at the same time because my body just, it just wakes up. And when you wake up, sometimes if I wake up like a Sunday morning, I'll wake up at 4:30. I'll just get up and I'll go the whole day and I won't be tired. But if I try to sleep again and then my alarm rings off and I'm in the middle of a dream, all day I'm like dragging. Because basically what happens when you sleep, you have a sleep pattern, a REM pattern, and you'll go into that. And then when you come out on the other end, your body feels rested. But if you're woke up in the middle of it, you're tired all day. Does that make sense? So it's the same thing here. It's the same thing with the debrief. If you're not careful, you'll leave them in the middle of an emotional hole and you haven't brought them back out properly. So be careful about jumping around. Okay. These are the two different, I want to get into these real quick, if you don't mind. These are the two different models of individual debriefing that achieve the same goal. One of them is a SAFER model, and the other one's a Ritten's model. These are acrostics, okay? So that's what they are. Each one of those letters stands for something. SAFER, that's the two R's for a reason. I'll show you why. And then the Ritten's are Ritten's. It is Ritten's. Okay, and that's how we remember what they are. So we're gonna go. We're gonna go through these. Boy, can you even read that? Can you even read that? The screen is not clear enough. So let me help you with this. The first one, the SAFER model, starts with stabilization. So up here, wow, this screen. We need a bigger screen. Is what we need, big on the wall screen. But that's what this is created for. The stabilization is where you start in a debrief. You've just come out of a trauma. Something just happened. It's a mess. Scene I was in was called to a school bus accident, and the driver was driving. A car hit him. A child in the front seat was thrown through the glass door, and he ran over the child.
I'm a bus driver.
You can imagine the trauma at that scene. Okay? What do you do? First thing you do is try to get everybody stabilized. Okay? How do you do that? My name is, this is who I am, I'm from, ask about basic safety needs. I arrived at the scene of a school shooting, high school shooting, and perimeter set up, cops are all there. I walk in, I had my badge from USSC. I had my little USSC badge. I put it in a little plastic thing. I had no uniform, nothing but that badge. And I told the police officers, at the time I was a captain in the United States Service Command, and I'm here to help. I know you've got a problem. I said, where's the command center? And they sent me to the command center. I walk in to the superintendent. Superintendent's standing there, wringing his hands. He doesn't know what to do. I said, I'm here to help you. I'm a captain in the, or a major, I was a major at the time, major in the United States Service Command. I'm here to help you with this situation. He turns and looks at me. He says, I don't know what to do.
Now,
Lord, have mercy.
Are we going to get badges?
Huh?
Are we going to get badges?
Not unless you belong to an organization that where you certify. Well, I'm going to give you a certification, but I won't give you a badge yet.
Oh.
It'll take some, you got to take some more training to get into the, into an organization like that.
Can you let us know where you're going to be holding those?
We'll talk more about that if you're interested. So stabilization is the first thing we want to do, okay? Okay, they're like, somebody help. Somebody has an answer. Anybody have an answer? And you're there, I'm here. The calming presence. And immediately they're like, they'll latch onto you. Somebody to help me. And you may not really know what to say or do, but just because you're there, right? They get it. Don't forget to ask me that question again. Acknowledgement. What can you tell me about what happened? How are you dealing with this? Don't insist that people disclose if they're not so inclined, but you acknowledge this is a bad thing. This is a very bad thing that happened. What happened? What did you see? What was going on? And then facilitate understanding. Although this is obviously very painful, you should know that your reactions are pretty normal with what we'd expect after the events you've gone through. So help them understand, okay, so you're feeling these things you're feeling. This is horrible stuff, right? And wow, man, this is bad stuff. I get what you're saying. I get how you're feeling. Be careful at this time about God cliches.
Yeah, Maya, a lot of them blame God at the moment.
Well, it can go either way, but I was at my house and a phone call rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. It's never good for a pastor. It was my brother-in-law on the other end of the line, you know, Norman, and he's a pastor in New York, and he's sobbing, having trouble controlling his breathing. And he said, Dan, he said, she's gone. I said, who's gone? I thought immediately my sister. He said, Angela, it was my niece. She was 21. She just graduated from Bob Jones University, was working at a Wilds camp in North Carolina. And she said, she's gone, she's gone. I said, what happened? He said, they found her. I said, what's going on, Norm? And he said, she had drowned. And she just finished college, was going to teach in a Christian school. Beautiful violin player, harp player, piano player. Everybody loved her. Beautiful girl, loved God. And there was a fluke accident, and she drowned, and they couldn't find her body. Scuba divers found her about 2 in the morning or so, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And so my brother-in-law had me come out and do the funeral because he couldn't, obviously. I walked into the room, and I'll tell you, I don't know if anybody's ever experienced this, but I stepped through the door, and I could not go any closer. I felt it myself. I could not walk up to the casket. I couldn't go anywhere. And I had to go up there and preach. I had to stand over that casket. And I had to preach. But when I preached, I couldn't look at her body. I couldn't look at her. And but I felt that physical restraint. Now, people would come up to my sister during that time. Well, God needed her more than you did. And say things like, you know, well, she was ready to go. And, you know, they don't know what to say.
It's best not to say
nothing. Don't say anything except, I'm sorry. I am so sorry. That's the best thing you can say. Because the feelings and emotions are so bad at that point. And so when someone is feeling that way, what can you do? What you should do is try to facilitate the fact that they are feeling bad. Don't give them explanation. Don't give them reasons. Can I tell you something? I've lived enough. I lost another nephew in a car wreck, 17 years old. And there's a lot of things that have happened. I'm going to tell you something. Some of those things that have happened to my life and what I've seen, it's just crap. Right? It's just bad. You say there's no point, no reason, except that we live in a broken world. Huh? It's horrible. We live in a broken world, and there's no good answer to it. I'm going to say something very unindependent, fundamental Baptist, but shit doesn't shine. Can I say that to you? Oh, a fireman was telling me the other day, he said, I'm using too much rough language. I said, have you ever read David when he was going to kill Goliath? Sometimes the appropriate words for the appropriate things, as long as you don't use Jesus' name in vain. I understand. There's some things is just garbage. And you can't polyurethane garbage and put it on the dining room table and say, look at this beautiful display. Garbage is garbage, and it belongs to be put in the garbage pail. I mean, when you... everyone has a bathroom, and some of those bathrooms, you just need to flush what's in there, right? And there's nothing good about it. There's no learning experience. I'm being really raw here, but I'm going to tell you, David, when he was looking at Goliath, he said, I'm going to cut your head off and we're going to feed it to the birds. And the Hebrew is very, very raw and vulgar. And you're going to see when you enter this world that's what happens a lot of times. There's raw and vulgar words and language, and you got to be okay with that because this is what we're dealing with. This is not a flower garden here. This is not all, let's hold hands and sing kumbaya. This is rough emotions that hurt very deeply. So you need to help facilitate understanding. This world we live in is broken. And you need to realize that this is what we're talking about here. It's very raw and very real, and it's up close and personal. And the language that I hear and what I'm around with all of this stuff is not something I bring into the pulpit with me Sunday morning. Amen. Unless it's an accident. Once in a while. Encourage effective coping. How can I help right now? If they are unsure, consider just being, don't dump that on them. Don't say, you need to tell me what I can do for you. Or if I could do anything for you, call. They don't really know. But encourage good coping. Encourage effective coping. I'm here for you. Here's my phone number. Call me. That's more than Call me anytime. It's like, let me write this down.
Well, you got to be careful.
Yeah, that's true. My cell phone is all over my county, and I get all kinds of calls. You wouldn't believe. Restoration and functioning or referral for continued care. How are you feeling now after a talk? The key to this stage is to assess if the person can perform the normal functions of their life. I'm going to show you now the what I call the written's model. It is written, all right? So maybe you can see this one a little better. Rapport. This is what you want to start with first. This is another model. It's another type you could do. I will try to get you copies of these on paper. Might help you. I have them with me. I just don't have enough copies. But the first thing you want to do with the written's model is you want to, and this one is very similar to a group debrief. The first thing you do is establish rapport. So rapport is the same kind of thing as stabilization. This is who I am. This is why I'm here. Just sometimes you mentioned a badge. Sometimes just letting them know that, how do I say this? Somebody here that knows what to do. Even if you're as much a loss as they are. You don't have to say, I know what to do. But just your calming presence helps them feel like you know what. Yeah, I saw a t-shirt the other day that had a picture of Trump on it, and it said, Daddy's home. And I think in a lot of circles, people are feeling that, like, okay, we don't know what to do, but there's somebody there that knows what to do, and we're grateful. And whatever your opinion or politics are, it doesn't matter. Some people felt that way about Obama, and, you know, I don't think anybody did about Biden. But anyway, the thing is that what I'm saying is that feeling of, oh, somebody knows what to do. Somebody, you know, that's what you bring to that. So establishing rapport, and this is where you don't have all the answers. And if you come across like the one with all the answers, they won't think you have all the answers. You have to realize that every situation is as much a learning thing for you as it is for them. You will learn, you will have a lot of experiences, and you probably have had a lot of experiences, but there are things that you will run across that you never had any idea what to do. I was called in by the National Army of Sierra Leone Republic, Republican National Army. I went over there to Africa right after the Ebola crisis, just before the Ebola crisis, right after the conflict there, the Blood Diamond conflict that was going on. I was called in right after that conflict. And some of the chaplains that I trained, some 300 chaplains in across many different military, I mean, Air Force, Metropolitan Police, many different, what do you call it, disciplines, I guess would be a way to say it, agencies is what I'm looking for. They were there, and some of them died in the Ebola crisis after I left. So this has been many years ago. But as we were talking, I was trying to teach them how to handle a crisis, and we were talking about drinking, and I was telling them be careful with drinking. Well, some of them were drunk sitting in the class. Some of the chaplains were drunk, and one of them stood up and he said, "How do I not drink? I don't know how to deal with this." And he had tears running down his cheeks, and he said, "The Nigerians came in and stole my wife, and my teenage daughter, and my son. I don't know where they are. They stole them in the middle of the night, and I hate them." He's a Christian, but he's like, how can you tell me not to drink? It's the only way I can deal with it. The love of my life is gone. And I'm like, Mr. Big Shot, I got no answer for you. And all I could do was stand there and think, how would I feel if my wife and children were stolen in the middle of the night. How would I be feeling right now? And I looked at him and I said, you're right. In the power of the flesh, without God's help, I would be at the bar right beside you because I'm no different than you are. And immediately we had rapport. See? And then we were able to work through some of the other details of that. Incident facts. Let me talk about facts for a minute. This is very, very critical. I'm going to say this in the next session, and we're almost out of time here. I got 4 minutes left, and we still got more to go. But that's okay because we've got two more class periods tomorrow to finish everything up. So if you want to come back, but plus what Tristan's going to share with us tomorrow. But the facts are so important. Facts, establishing facts. This is actually, I'm going to give you this ahead of time, and we'll say it tomorrow, and it'll underscore it. When you're dealing with PTSD, a lot of times what people are struggling with is guilt. So you'll hear this in the military, Brother Joe could tell you. They'll say, I didn't do enough. Same thing is in EMS. Somebody mentioned it. You've mentioned it. I didn't do enough. Was it your son?
Your son.
And you're like, I didn't do enough. So what I'll do with a PTSD person, again, we'll go over this again in another class. I'll sit down with a piece of paper and I'll say, okay, tell me what you did. X. And I'll put an X. And then I'll say, tell me what you did next. And they'll say this. And I'll put another X. Say, tell me what you did next. I'll put another X. Tell me what you did next. I'll put another X. And sometimes you'll find 10 or 15 things that they did in sequence. I did this. I did this. I said, that's your training, right? This is what you're supposed to do when you're faced with this situation. This is what you do. And they're looking at you like, well, I did that. Well, you know, their brain's telling them you didn't do enough because they died. Well, what you've got to communicate to them is outcome does not always depend on their action. They have no control over outcome. All they have control over is their action. So you show them that they acted appropriately, X, 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 X. And in the conversation, I'm going to show you this tomorrow, Jesus did this with Peter after the crucifixion. We'll go back into it. God did this with Jonah in the Old Testament. He did this, 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 and then go over that. And this one particular guy, we went over that list of X's 5 times. And he'd start saying something. I said, well, you did this. You did this. Look, you went there. You stabilized the situation. You made sure she was safe. You stopped the bleeding. You told her, you radioed for help. You stayed with her till the help. And and when we were done, he said, I wish I'd have met you 10 years ago because it helped him. You see? And facts are very important. Facts, whenever we do death notifications, that was my job for a while with the sheriff's department. And we do death notifications. People will, I don't know if any of you guys have ever had to do that. There's a way to do death notifications. I probably ought to have a class on that here. There's a way you do them. So I would go in and we would sit down and talk. And okay, so this one case, we go to the door, the house, we knock on the door. And a guy comes to the door and I said, is this the home of his wife? And he said, yeah, it's my wife. And I said, is she home right now? Well, I knew she wasn't. He hollers in the kitchen. Hey, babe. He thought she was in the kitchen. Well, it happened. They were getting ready for a party that night. And she ran out of something at the store. She jumped on her motorcycle, never told him she had left, was headed to the store to grab whatever it was and come back. A car hit her. She was in a hurry. Car hit her, and we were picking up pieces off the road. She was in her shorts and flip-flops, and skin was everywhere, and we were picking that up. And so I go to the house, and he's like, he didn't even know she was gone. Now, how did this happen? You understand, in his mind, the trauma he's dealing with. He thought she was slicing tomatoes in the kitchen. And his wife, there's a cop at the door. I was in uniform. The cops were in uniform. These uniform guys at the door, and they're saying, my wife's dead. I thought she was in the kitchen. We're getting ready for a party tonight. So what we had to do was we had to go over, this is what happened. 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 In a group setting, we'll have different people saying, you know, they saw this or they saw this, and we try to compile the story. But in an individual, you have to do the same thing. You have to go through the facts. It's because that's the way your brain is wired. Remember the story I showed you about you know, picturing the lion and the dolphin? Remember that? Your brain just takes all these different pieces and throws them together in one jumbled mess, and then you're not like, what do I do? You know, what do I do with all this? Well, organizing those thoughts is critical. It's very, very important in a debrief. And you may spend more time on that than anything else. Okay? Third thing is thoughts. Okay, so this is what we talked about. You asked about bouncing around, right?
Right.
So you've now established facts. Now you're going down the slope a bit. You're getting into their inside just a little bit, into the emotions. Now we're talking about, what were you thinking about? What crossed your mind? Now, in many cases, if you've had a traumatic experience before, this one is going to resonate. You're going to recall what you've seen before. It's going to hurt you again, right? And so you're going to think about that. And all of a sudden, you've got like trauma membrane, and you got pain and cuts and things and bruises in your soul already that's going to come back to you. So now you're dealing with more than one thing, right? And in every situation, you're going to flush out. Now, sometimes they'll say, this is the worst thing. I heard this recently with the train situation. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. I've heard that more than once in my career. Old geezers, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And that's usually what I get called to, the worst thing anybody's ever seen.
So let's say a lady jumped on the track recently in our town.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what happened to us this week.
Right. And on the Kenosha County scanner, somebody was having anxiety on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Would I just go over there and offer my assistance to the police to help?
You can. You can. What I would do is ahead of time build relationships with the police so they know that you're available. Mm-hmm. One of the things that chaplains make mistakes of with police and fire is they force their way in. You have to offer yourself and be available.
They might think, oh, well, she don't think we're adequate. She's just coming here.
Well, you want to be an option for them.
Right, but that's how they would think.
Yeah. And it takes time. I'm going to tell you, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time and effort. But when you become the option and you deliver when they need you, you'll be their first call the next time. Does that make sense? So you want to prepare ahead of time that relationship connection. It's not the best thing for you to do to show up on a scene if they don't know who you are.
So,
because now you're a problem they have to manage.
How can we, as women, represent us as clergy? That's the thing.
You don't have to represent as clergy.
No.
You can represent as a chaplain, as a specialist. As a CISM specialist, you can represent yourself that way. And you will become a specialist as you handle more and more cases. Be careful with the specialist term when you come out of training. It's like a college student just graduating from college with knowing the knowledge, but not having the experience to match it. I've watched some of my trainees do things. They've stumbled all over themselves because they've had the class, but they've never experienced any trauma, and so they don't connect well.
I was working at the homeless shelter. Yeah, you straight out of college, you think you can handle everything, and then all of a sudden it's like...
But it's all of us, it's the same as straight out of training. You know, I had a chaplain I had to fire one time because he said, when we see the ambulance, do we follow them?
No.
No. That's weird. No. You're an option. You're not. And this same guy went into the jail and he went and bought some handcuffs and he stuck them on his belt. And he went to the jail to talk to the, he wanted to walk around like he was a police officer. Even the officers don't put handcuffs on their belt and go into the jail because that's a weapon. They get that off of your belt and you're in trouble. They'll take everything, you know. So I don't know if that answered your question, but we're going through the Ritten's model here that we're on the T of thoughts. What are they thinking about? That's one of the things you want to flesh out a little bit. And then emotional reactions. That chart I gave you, that's something you can take with you. That chart is a thing you want to copy. You take that and copy it on your copier and pass that thing out and say, look, these are emotional, typical emotional reactions. Because what are we doing? We're normalizing, number five. We're trying to show them, look, your feeling is normal. I'll show those cards to these guys and I'll say, how many of these things are you feeling? And some guy will say, all of them. Some guy will say, half of these on here is what I'm feeling right now. Someone else will say, oh, this one and this one and this one. And it's like, okay, so do you realize this chart is made up of thousands and thousands of people's feedback? And we see that feedback coming in. You're just like everyone else. And they're like, oh, because everybody wants to be like everybody else. Nobody wants to be weird.
They're not the only one.
Right, right. Let me finish this sheet up and I'll let you go. Support and closure. We're going to give you more on this tomorrow in the class tomorrow, but we're going to talk about support and closure. How do you bring that? Bring them back. You've got to bring them back into reality. And I'll show you how Jesus did that with Peter. If you want to look ahead at the end of John and you think through what we're going to talk about, Jesus gave Peter something to do, right? Afterwards. And that's how you give them some tools, some more tools, and we'll give you some more tools tomorrow. Before I let you go, I'm going to stop right here for this today, and we're going to talk some more. We've got some more slides on this show, and we'll talk some more about this tomorrow. But I want to tell you something I discovered recently, and then you guys can go anytime after that if you don't mind. But scientists are discovering right now, there's a handful of scientists that have discovered that at the submolecular level, everything is made up of frequencies and sound. So I don't know if anybody else has heard of this. I've been doing some research into it. It's really fascinating. So, you know, if you see a little house made out of Legos, okay, you see that house, it's made out of what? Legos. Well, what's the Legos made out of? Plastic. What's the plastic made out of? Right? So it's the same with everything is made up of molecules and atoms, right? So what's the molecules and atoms made of?
Energy.
Well, at the very submolecular, right, this is another way of saying it. The submolecular level is vibrations and frequencies. And they're different. And when they mesh together, they create things. Okay? Now, think about it. What does the Bible say about that? By the word of the Lord were the heavens made. Word is what created everything. Sound, right? John 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, the same as in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Who? The Word, sound. Sound made everything. Sound is the submolecular construct of every single thing. That's you. So you are made up. At your very core, the very bottom, the base of all of the molecules in your body is made up of vibrations. So when you hear music, you know how it touches your soul? Certain kinds of music, certain frequencies of music, it gets into the very core of your being. Now, God said, every idle word that man shall speak, he'll give account thereof the day of judgment. Why? Because your words, he said, can set on fire the course of nature. Your words. So your words, the sound, the things that you say, literally touch people at the submolecular level. Not just their minds, not just their emotions, but their bodies. That's why the Bible says, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine.
So even like when you're talking to them, just Softly
breathe. Sometimes, yeah.
And just
how you talk.
Way up here, you want to.
You can bring them down. You can bring them down with your voice.
Right.
I have on more than one occasion had a fellow that was drunk, and he had a 357 with the hammer pulled back this far from my face. And he was looking at me. He said, "I want to show you my Bible." I'm like, he's a hammer, pearl-handled pistol. I saw every detail. I could describe that thing. The bullets were hollow-tipped, silver bullets. You know, silver hollow-tipped bullets. Not silver, but hollow-tipped, you know, the lead. And the color was silver, you know, gray. You know, you could see it. You look right in there. And I'm looking at that thing, and I said, "Wow, that's a pretty good-looking Bible." I said, "I love the pearl handles there, man. That's really nice." And he pulls the gun away from my face to show me the pearl handle. I'm like, "Would you let me hold it?" And he said, "Well, yeah." And he hands me the gun. I very, very gingerly ease the hammers down. And I said, "Wow, that's an amazing gun. Thanks for showing that to me." "Yeah, man." And I went and slid it into his drawer, closed the drawer. It was like, it was just talking to him. Words have a lot of power. Huh? Think about it. All right? All right. Thanks for being such a great class. I hope to see you again tomorrow. All right? God bless you.